Dear listener and fellow story lover, this week's story is a collection of anecdotal jokes that play on the nuances of the English language and its pronunciation. Some bits could be considered a little droll, however I feel they can be forgiven due to the era. So now, let's step back into 1915 together. I hope you enjoy this week's Stories from Before. The Sunny Side of the Hedge, written by Anonymous, read by Selena Cadell, by permission of the Lutterworth Press, music by Stacey Weir. A Matter of Accent. At a trial between two London music publishers before the Court of King's Bench in 1813, the matter in dispute being a violation of the copyright in the song of The Old English Gentleman, Thomas Cook, a composer of some note in his day, was subpoenaed as an expert witness. On cross-examination, Sir James Scarlett questioned him as follows. "Now, sir, you say that the two melodies are the same, but different. What do you mean by that?" Tom promptly answered, "I said that the notes in the two copies were alike, but with different accent, the one being in common time, the other in 6/8 time, and consequently the position of the accented notes was different. Now, pray, sir, don't beat around the bush, but explain to the jury, who are supposed to know nothing about music, the meaning of what you call accent." "Certainly," said Cook. "Accent in music is the stress laid upon a particular note, in the same manner as you would lay stress upon a word, for the purpose of being understood. Thus, if I were to say, 'You are an ass,' it rests on ass. But if I were to say, 'You are an ass,' it rests on you, Sir James." Shouts of laughter by the whole court followed this repartee. Silence at length having been obtained, the judge, with much seeming gravity, inquired, "Are you satisfied, Sir James?" Sir James, who had become scarlet in more than name, in a great huff replied, "The witness may go down." A close analogue to this story is recorded by the Reverend K. Arvine in his Dictionary of Anecdotes. A clergyman, on reading the 13th verse of the 13th chapter of 1 Kings, placed the emphasis on the words denoted by italics, rendering the verse an absurdity. "And he said unto his sons, Saddle me the ass. So they saddled him." It was merely a misplaced accent that induced two Irishmen to leave an Episcopal church which they had entered for the first time. While waiting for the service to begin, one of them picked up a prayer book and, after examining it for a short time, he turned to his friend. "Come, Pat, let's slide out of this while we can. This is no place for anyone but the wretch. After every third prayer, it says, 'Collect.'" The point of the following joke depends entirely upon the emphasis that its heroine placed on a single word. "I have a great mind to go to the club tonight," said Jones to his wife. "What?" she replied with apparent surprise. "I have a great mind to go to the club tonight." "Whose?" she asked.
"Whose what?"
"Whose great mind?"
"Why, my own, of course."
"Oh."
And the rising inflection she gave the ejaculation was quite provoking to a man of fine feelings. Thackeray was once at loggerheads with a fellow bohemian of the press, the now forgotten Angus B. Reach. Reach was touchy about the pronunciation of his name, claiming that it was properly Reac with two syllables and the accent on the last. To Thackeray's discomfort, he found himself at dinner one evening with Reach. In the course of the meal, the novelist had to ask, "Mr. Reach, shall I send you some mutton?"
"Mr. Thackeray," returned the other, "I must request, sir, that you will not call me out of my name. My name is Reac, sir. Reac."
"I beg pardon," said Thackeray. But he watched for his opportunity, which came at dessert. A dish of fruit being placed before him, he again addressed himself to Angus B.
"Mr. Reac," he said, "may I send you a piac?"
Someone repeated this witticism at a later dinner, where Thackeray himself and Dickens were both present. After the laugh had gone round, Dickens leaned over the table and asked,
Did you really say that, Thackeray?
Certainly.
And think it original?
Of course.
You don't mean you said it?
No, replied Dickens with a twinkle in his eye.
But I was at Lord John Russell's the other day, and having to wait for him a few minutes, took up a book, which happened to be a volume of Tom Moore's diary. There I read, under date of 1826, I think, that Lutterell the wit, dining next to gentlemen whose father invented the napkins or serviettes which are used after dinner for finger glasses, addressed him as Mr. Doyley, and was informed rather angrily that the real name was Dehoyley.
Very well, retorted Lutterell in his blandest manner. May I trouble you, Mr. Dehoyley, for a little of that dehumpling?
So you see, added Dickens triumphantly, your joke is at least 30 years old.
But indeed, it was even older. Dickens might have found this story in Horace Walpole's letters.
A caller at the house of one Cholmondeley, spelt Cholmondeley, in London, asked the servant who opened the door if Mr. Cholmondeley was at home, pronouncing the name with all its syllables, in infringement of custom, which shortens it to Cholmondeley.
Don't know, sir, replied the lackey. But I'll ask some of his people.
Pursuing his researches even further back, Dickens might have found the dehumpling story itself told in the following fashion about a famous wit of the 18th century. Dean Swift was in company one day when the conversation fell upon genealogy.
The lady of the house expatiated a little too freely on her ancient descent, observing that her ancestors' name began with D-E, showing that they were not merely Normans, but nobles.
And now, madame, interrupted Swift, will you be so kind as to help me to a piece of that deumpling? Mr. Justice Hawkins, a famous pleader of the Victorian era, was engaged before Lord Campbell in a case that arose out of a collision between a broom, spelt B-R-O-U-G-H-A-M, and an omnibus. One of the advocates pronounced the word brougham as a dissyllable, evidently unaware that the name of the vehicle, like the surname of Lord Broom, is abbreviated into a monosyllable. After several repetitions, the judge grew irritated and exclaimed, "Brother Hawkins, if you would say broom, you would save a syllable and the time of the court." Counsel took the hint, but bided his time for a retort. Presently, the judge began to sum up, and had occasion to speak of the omnibus.
"My lord," interrupted the audacious advocate, "if your lordship would only say bus, you would save two syllables and the time of the court."
Lord Mansfield received a much harder setting down from Thomas Erskine. The latter was arguing a case before the House of Lords, a Scottish appeal relating to a trust estate. In the course of his argument, he had frequent occasion to use the word curator, always pronouncing it in the manner approved in the Scottish courts, that is, with the accent on the first syllable. This grated upon the ears of Lord Mansfield, who, though a Scotsman by birth, had taken pains to become anglicised. At last he broke out, "Mr. Erskine, we're in the habit in this country of saying curator, following the analogy of the Latin, in which, as you are doubtless aware, the penultimate syllable is long."
"I thank you, your lordship, very much," returned Erskine. "We are weak enough in Scotland to think that in pronouncing the word curator, we are following the analogy of the English language. But I need scarcely say that I bow with pleasure to the opinion of so learned a senator and so great an orator as your lordship."
The last story suggests a retort attributed to Rudyard Kipling. At a dinner, one of his fellow guests started a discussion concerning the spelling and pronunciation of the English language.
"Have you ever noticed, Mr. Kipling," he asked, "that in the entire English language there are only two words beginning with S-U that are pronounced as though beginning with S-H? Those two are sugar and shamuck. Having made an exhaustive study on the subject, you may take it from me that this is so."
"Are you sure?" was Kipling's only and sufficient response. The end. I hope this collection of anecdotes brought a smile or caused you to chuckle a little. Perhaps they have reminded you of some funny language experiences of your own. I will be taking a break from creating weekly content while I focus on some other projects. However, I ask you to please continue to share this podcast and stories with your family and friends. I look forward to returning with a new season of stories later in the year, but until then, I wish you all peace, good health and joy, and I thank you for listening to Stories from Before.